clock. You know, I often sigh and I go, wow, what? People really love the animals. To be quite honest, I have a cat. His name is Simon. He's the most grumpy cat that I have ever met, but I love Simon very much. But I love humans more. You know, if I would protect Simon and feed Simon and make sure he's comfortable and warm and safe, and I've paid for the vet visits and the vaccinations, and when he broke his leg after being knocked by a car, I put out a lot of money to try and rectify him. He was a bit of a robo cat with a plaster cast on his hind leg for quite a few weeks, maybe even about 2 months. But I also understand why people love the animals so much. I know that there's enough humans to disappoint one for you to find the humanity of animals, and I absolutely appreciate that. But gosh, you guys spend a lot of money on your animals. Just some of the comments that I've been hearing and eavesdropping on into RefillWiz's show. 600 to 1,000 rand on pet food? Wow. You know, Simon eats well. But I'm not saying I feed Simon budget cat food, but Simon eats well. But gosh, it's definitely not in the range of 600 to 1,000 rand. Yeah, what kind of meals are those? So if you want to continue that conversation about maybe why people feel that they have and they see more humanity in their animals and their pets, then you're open to have that conversation here with us. 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp. 072-567-1567. But it's expensive hobbies also. My brother-in-law has turned into a bit of a birder. He breeds very exotic birds and budgies and parakeets. And I don't even know what some of these birds are called, but it puts him back in his pocket, but he sees it a bit as a hobby, but also as a bit of an investment. He then sells these budgies onto to other people. So if you're one of those people, you invest in your animals. 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp. 072-567-1567. But I'm also interested in the return to school. As of yesterday, classrooms filled up as schools reopened for the third term, despite the challenges faced in some provinces. Primary schools will continue with this rotational timetables until the 2nd of August, when the traditional and daily timetables is supposed to be implemented. But it comes amidst great challenges for many school-going people. In KZN alone, there were 140 schools that were damaged during violence and vandalism over the last few weeks. In Cape Town, thousands of children depend on the taxi industry to get to and from schools. And we know what we've been experiencing in the city over the last not only few weeks, but months. We know the issues there. Also, just going through some of the documents by the Department of Basic Education, there seem to be some vague SOPs that don't, to me, adequately prescribe, you know, the spacing between learners. They prescribe 1 meter spacing, but promote the quote-unquote principle of striving for 1 meter distance where possible in classrooms. And if we're sitting in classrooms with, what, 40, 45, maybe even 50 learners in a class, just how possible is adequate spacing? But as of 2 weeks ago, there was about 84% of Western Cape teachers who were vaccinated. So that allays that concern. But of course, some parents are still cautious. And late in the show, we're going to be talking about a very serious issue of a trend of dropouts last year and into this year through a pandemic and violence collectively that resulted in the lowest school attendance in 20 years in South Africa. And the dropout rate has tripled. It's very, very worrying. According to the data that was published by the NIDSCRAM survey, 500,000 learners have dropped out of school since the start of this pandemic. And of course, it's the poorest households who are worst affected, and in rural communities. Remember, it's law, it's legislated that children between the ages of 7 and 15 must be in school or some sort of school environment. So if you are a teacher, if you are a parent, if you are part of a school community, please call in. I'd like to know what some of the experiences like of getting schools to 100 capacity after the announcement by the president on Sunday. It's easy for us to simply put on an education analyst or an official on air, but I'd like to hear the experiences of school communities. I'm of the opinion that schools with sufficient safeguards need to be open as much as possible. 2020 was a devastating year when it comes to teaching that could not be done. Of course, learning can be done everywhere. Work that was sent home, modules that were sent home. So learning can be done, but teaching took a knock during last year. And school communities, you know, with the resources to online teaching or learning activities, they were able to do so. But of course, it is a large portion of children who were unable to do so. So their time is spent idly at home in the street. And there are interventions that we need to do collectively as communities. I'm not necessarily in favor of punitive measures. Truancy officers, they just remind me of the 80s. So I'm not talking about truancy officers. I'm talking about real community interventions, community structures like churches, street communities, you know, urging parents to send their children back to school, door-to-door campaigns to identify the kids who are not at school. And there's also a larger systematic campaign that if we get schools to work, then we also get households to work and vice versa. And if we're going to talk about rebuilding this country and rebuilding this economy, I think that is where it starts. I think that is where it starts when we talk about rebuilding this country. It starts by getting kids back to school. So your thoughts, your calls, 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567. You are listening to Lester Kibbett here on The Morning Review.
The lines are always open.
Call Lester and join the conversation on 021-446-0567.
Taking your calls, 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567. Bridget in Saldanha Bay, thanks for calling in. How are you doing this morning?
You know me as Oma.
Oma Bridget. I hope you are well since the last time that we spoke.
Yeah, sweetheart, listen, I've got a problem. So I've been saving tortoises now for the last 3 years. And I've spoken to the SPCA. I've spoken to the animal welfare, but they don't seem to want to help me with the tortoises. Now they got babies, and I've got 12 of them. And I'm sitting with them in my garden. I saved them from children, throwing them with bricks. And you know, when and the poor tortoise falls, goes up in the air, falls down on the road, and then they laugh at it. And it was only 3 children always used to do that. I don't know where they stay. And now I'm sitting with these tortoises and they got babies and I'm struggling to keep them alive.
On tortoises also protected, Bridget?
They must be. They must be, but the SPCA said they don't see to it.
Okay.
So I've got a problem here with the little things and I'm 81 years of age. I can't go and I don't know. I'm a bit troubled.
How many tortoises do you have?
I've got eight. I've given a policeman took 4 of them and put them somewhere in the felt.
Yeah, but,
you know, wouldn't that
be the best way then, Bridget, instead of, you know, giving it away or people to take them, to simply
I would have liked the SPCA to do it for me. I don't know anybody here.
Okay.
I'm on my own here in this house.
Do you have a small felt close to your home?
Yes, I have, but, you know, they come out in the road again. I want them to take them somewhere where there's no roads.
Okay. Okay, Bridget, someone has messaged here saying, I would love to take those tortoises. I have a male looking for mates. We'll connect with some of the people here on our WhatsApp line. I think that we'll do you a favor here. Bridget, I'll put you through back to our producers, and there's someone here who would like to take some tortoises off you. But of course, we have to be responsible, so we'll vet, of course, whoever we are passing over these tortoises to. But your thoughts, your calls, 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567. Let's go through to some of your voice notes now.
Hi there. When I was a youngster, there used to be a license. You had to have license to have a dog or a cat. But what happened to that law? And somehow, in my area where I live, Hanover Park, at breeds, there's so many cats and so many dogs, you can't believe how many dogs there are. Safiq.
Hi, Lester. My name is John. I'm on this question of our emotions, our love for animals, is something that is of real interest to me as well. The question is that our experiences of what we think are uniquely human emotions. I mean, the question is where did this come from? The origins of it. It's something I've been wondering about for a long time, and I just recently discovered that the great Charles Darwin wrote a very important book with the title of The Expression of Emotions in Man and Animals. And he's, of course, suggesting that not only have we evolved biologically from other species, but also emotionally have we evolved in our relation with and to other species. So this idea that our emotions for our domestic cats and dogs is actually one of an example of how our emotions are jumping species from one to another. But it's got its, according to Charles Darwin, it's got its origins in the way that we have evolved, not only biologically, but also emotionally. So there's some thoughts for you. I'd like to just put it out there and hear what some of your other listeners might have to say about this.
I think it's very profound and it's very thought-provoking. I do know many of my friends, actually, they feel a greater affinity to animals, whether it be their own pets or animals in general, than they do to other people. And this is, they say, because they feel that humanity, people, have disappointed them so much that they do then turn to animals for some form of emotional connection. But there's also Nkululeko Mbalvo, who says, let's come on now. We have tens of thousands of people dying, and over 300 people died from unrest last week. And we have people feeling more emotional about cats. We have people crying on live radio about cats. Oh, please, get out of here, says Nkululeko. We can feel just the same about animals as we do about people. And if I can recall, just on this show alone, Nkululeko, we've been talking about the violence perpetrated against people, you know, just over the last few weeks, whether it be taxi violence or whether it be political violence in KZN, we talk about it every single day. And if people want to express that they have lost an animal due to very gruesome circumstances, then I think we also need to give people those space. Lee in Durbanville, good day.
Hi, good day. Yes, I just heard the plea of the lady with the tortoises. I'm in an area where I've got huge green belts next to the house and whatever, so I can definitely help her with that. So if you in need of that, she can just get hold of me and we can arrange collection. I don't know what area she's in, but yeah, definitely willing to help.
I am also familiar that, and as people have mentioned, you require licenses to have tortoises as pets, Lee.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, I don't know how you would go about that.
I know Saldanha is very close to the West Coast National Park, there up there in Langebaan. Maybe we can put in contact with someone from that area. But thanks so much for the call. Lee Ibtisam in Wellington, good morning.
Hi, Lester. I just came in on the back end of the story, but on the topic of people that care more about animals than they care about other humans, I was just wondering, is this Peter Jacobson guy who's in charge of that pamphlet, isn't he the owner of that Vondi's pet shop food place?
You wouldn't be wrong to suggest that, Ibtisam.
Yeah, it's quite bothersome. People don't realize that the fate of animals will only improve once humans are actually empowered. Mm. No one's going to care about animals if they can't even look after themselves.
Ibtisam in Wellington, thanks so much for that call. Hazel in Parklands.
Yes, I've heard the tail end of the story on radio this morning, but it was disconcerting me when I heard that someone was looking to find homes for tortoises. Essentially, and maybe this has been said on the radio in the meantime, essentially the Department of Nature Conservation must be phoned if people are trying to relocate tortoises. Members of the public are not allowed to move tortoises from one place to another, and they certainly shouldn't be just dumping tortoises in a piece of open felt somewhere, especially tortoises that have been living in a domestic garden for so long and been used to getting some food and stuff like that. The other thing is that people have to have permits from the Department of Nature Conservation in order to keep tortoises. Looking for homes for her tortoises, perhaps should contact the Department of Nature Conservation.
She wasn't looking for someone to take it off her hands. She said she had been calling the SPCA.
The SPCA doesn't get involved. Usually the SPCA is not really into tortoises and things like that. But certainly the Department of Nature Conservation. I have got some tortoises myself. I had to get a permit all those years ago, and that is how I know about this. There's also a lady in Pinelands who used to have a sort of a sanctuary, but again, you can possibly contact her. And that is a possible other option. Certainly the Department of Conservation sometimes used to ask her to help them.
Hazel in Parklands, thank you so much. Really appreciating your calls here on the open line, 021-446-0567. You are listening to The Morning Review. We'll take more of your calls after this.
Cape Talk,
The Open Line.
Call 021-446-0567.
But the lines are open. You can call in with whatever's on your mind, or respond and react and critique and opine about some of the other things that we have been speaking about over the 2.5 hours and counting. But Andrew's called in from Rondebosch this morning. Good day, Andrew. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Lester. Just following on to what you said, you were talking about earlier with regard to travel. Mm-hmm. And I was actually on my way home from Home Affairs at the time, where I'd been turned away because it's level 3 or level 4 now and they aren't issuing passports. Now, what makes it even more puzzling is I could go online, I could fill out the form, I could get an appointment. I went to a bank, not the Home Affairs office, and no indication whatsoever that they're not issuing passports. And when I got to the lady in the Home Affairs in the branch, she said, "Sorry, we're not processing passports because it's lockdown level 3, unless it's an emergency." So,
it's about communication, isn't it?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I actually said to her, "Why? There's nothing on your website."
Yes.
She said, "Yeah, well, she's been asking." And I think it's because the passports, if you actually go on the e-Home Affairs website. You can do the passports and ID at the same time, and maybe they're doing ID. But what makes us even more curious, okay, so that's a lemon for Home Affairs, is on the 28th of June, and this earlier incident today was for my daughter. On the 28th of June, I actually went in, I applied online, I got my own passport. I went in, I got my biometrics done the next day, and 2 weeks later, which would have been, I think, last week or the week before, I got my passport. So not only being very inconsistent. So in the last month, I've applied online. I went and did my biometrics in the same branch, got my passport.
What branch was this, Andrew?
It was the Nedbank in St. George's Mall.
Okay.
Yeah. But the Home Affairs offices in there are run as Home Affairs branches. They've got nothing to do with the bank. So I just, you know, because I got mine, and it was a phenomenal, that's a bit of a double-sided message, this.
Right.
You know, on the one hand, I was blown away by the service. I mean, they did matter that it was level 3 and they shouldn't be issuing passports. But I said, you know, if you're applying online, it's social distance. I'm going into the branch, and the branch, they're very, very careful around social distancing and sanitizing. And when you go into the little Home Affairs office, that was me and the Home Affairs lady. She took my photograph, did my biometrics, and literally within 20 minutes, I was out of there. And I thought, what a wonderful, amazing experience. Let me do my daughter's. So hence...
I'm as I'm listening to you, I'm also just sort of on the DHA's website at the moment. There's absolutely nothing. There's an alert that says Home Affairs services adjusted level 4, read more. But we're no longer in a level 4. We're in level 3.
We're level 3. Now, to make, I mean, she said that she can do it if it's an emergency. Is it an emergency? I said, well, I'm a little bit different. I have a boat, and I'm going to get on my boat at the end of the year, and I'm going to cross the Atlantic Ocean and go and cruise the Caribbean, okay? So this is why I need a passport.
Have you done your research on what vaccination certificates you need when you get to St. Kitts or wherever you're going to?
No, you're going to Grenada. You know, the thing is, you go to those islands, a lot of them take the sea time into account. So if you spend, like going to St. Helena, you take 2 weeks to get there, they recognize that. And these places, you might have to sit in your boat for a week or so. They will even vaccinate you. You can arrive there and get a vaccination. So I'm not worried about COVID and vaccine. The thing that terrifies me most is bureaucracy. But
living the life. Look at living the life and avoiding bureaucracy. I think that's absolutely great. But Andrew,
kind of both.
Best of luck. I hope you get sorted with Home Affairs. We could try and ask. I think it's Mr. Plykes from Home Affairs. Just what exactly is an update? I'm trying to just half with one eye, keep eye on our messages, my ear on the call, and also scan through our Home Affairs website. Nothing about being closed on level 3 when it comes to passports. Only mentions level 4. But from Andrew to another Andrew. Andrew in Pinelands. Good morning.
Good morning, Lisa. You hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Your son got a recognized VAC certificate in Zim.
Yes, indeed. My son has a contract to go and work in Bahrain, and the only way for him to get a recognized VAC certificate is to go to Zimbabwe. So he went at the beginning of July for his first job, came back, went and towards the sort of last week or the week before to go and get his second job, and he came back with a full VAC certificate, internationally accepted, and he's leaving for Bahrain at the end of July.
What does that document look like?
Oh, heavens, it's some... I don't know exactly. I mean, he showed it to me, but I mean, you know, it looks like a fairly legitimate document, and you know, he submitted it to Bahrain, and they've accepted it. You know, so the visa process is ongoing.
Yeah. Now, I've also heard some procedures when it comes to Qatar, in that while you I have it in front of me now, in that while they don't necessarily accept those little cards that we get here, if you then go to Qatar, and I'm just reading it for post here, you do a PCR test, and then they have this domestic track and trace system. It's called ETERAS, and then you register there. And apparently, if you go there, you show your documentation, whatever rudimentary form it is, whether it is that card, whether it is the SMS, you do a PCR test, you then have to download this ETERAS system on your phone, and then that is used as your passport to get through border control without a form of quarantine in Qatar. But that's just a post that I'm seeing here in front of me. But it really calls for really a standardized approach that we're going to have to, that our politicians, that our nation states around the world are going to have to negotiate and come to an agreement on sooner rather than later.
Yeah, exactly. But the fact is, as I say, you know, South Africa always seems to be behind the curve. We're completely giving out these little cards, and they're not accepted, and then we have to go through, jump through hoops in order to be able to get to where we need to go. as opposed to Zimbabwe, who is by definition, you know, gone backwards, and yet look how far ahead they are of us, just in terms of this basic process. You know?
Andrew in Pinelands.
I just thought I'd mention that to you.
Thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it. Andrew in Pinelands. Okay. Look, as much as it is a dinky little business card with a handwritten scroll of when I got my first vaccination, I am very, very proud of my vaccination card. But we're talking about traveling vaccination certificates. If you have any experience and what you need, many people asking questions about when I go and trying to make inquiries about traveling overseas. Many countries not accepting our little vaccination cards that we have here, but they accept the little handwritten note when it comes to yellow fever. So if you have any experience, give us a call, 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567.
Hi, Lester. About the vaccine certificate, my son has a contract to go and work in Bahrain, and he had to go to Zimbabwe twice to go and get his vaccine certificate, a proper internationally accepted vaccine certificate. Somebody who's going to work with him there didn't make it to Zimbabwe, and he got jabs in South Africa, and he got this little card, and he cannot go to Bahrain because he does not have a certificate. Zimbabwe is able to supply a certificate. Why can't we in South Africa do the same?
Hi, Lester. Just a quick one. I'm getting more and more concerned that everything's moving towards the vaccines being mandatory. There's no legal framework for things being mandatory, but places like Israel, Australia, it's becoming almost impossible to move around in public spaces, and the new Israeli Prime Minister has actually encouraged neighbours and friends to start bullying people into being vaccinated. As far as I know, it's a highly personal choice, and there's a lot of people who've been getting adverse reactions to the vaccination, and I don't know. I just hope we don't go back to a sort of a Nazi Germany situation where people are being bullied into and being forced to follow follow a certain line around vaccinations. Thanks.
I don't hear this particular argument when you want to travel to a country that requires a yellow fever vaccination. I don't hear this particular argument that I'm being forced to. And of course, no one is forcing you to. And it is your right not to take one. But it is also your responsibility. And I don't hear this argument when we talk about a yellow fever vaccination. To get into certain countries, and I've traveled a bit, they checked for the hepatitis and the yellow fever, and I forget whatever was in that yellow side of that yellow little vaccination side of my passport. And you don't make your argument for that, but why for a COVID-19 vaccination? And again, adverse effects. What do you mean adverse effects? I had side effects from my first jab for probably more than 2 days. I was very lethargic. I was very tired. Second day, my arm was like dead. It was like a dead leg. It was very, very sore. Had a bit of a headache. I took two Panados. But that is the trade-off. So no vaccines are effective, 100% effective. But we talk about the trade-off between a level of protection from severe COVID and the side effects. I would rather take the side effects than going to a situation where I end up in hospital and possibly die. And that is the trade-off that we make. About whether countries can force you to take a vaccination if you want to enter, of course, it's the country's right to do so. Same as the country's right to say you can't come in here without a yellow fever vaccination, but you don't raise your arms up in that and talk about, in that voice notes example, Nazi Germany. but somehow for a COVID-19 vaccine, you do. Please explain that to me. 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp. 072-567-1567. You are listening to The Morning Review. It is The Open Line.
Cape Talk. Cape Talk. WhatsApp Leicester.
072-567-1567.
Thank you to Kim for sending me this message. It's a tweet, and it says, a personal choice that puts others at risk is no longer a choice that is personal. If you live in total isolation from the rest of the world, you have a personal choice. If you live in a society, you have a responsible choice. Get vaccinated. I'd like your thoughts, your calls. It is The Open Line, 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 072-567-1567. Let's listen to some of your messages.
Lester, good morning. We can't really go anywhere without a visa, either being at a Schengen or a UK visa, so why can't the visa application forms include proof of your vaccinations, and then when they issue the visa, they put the QR code in your passport, which will allow you to go into those countries.
I think we're going to start looking at that at the moment. I'm seeing reports that were published in, I think it's Business Insider or Business Report, that South Africa is looking at some form of travel passport, some indication that is recognized worldwide that you are vaccinated in this country. And it's also quite interesting in how in recent years state departments and home offices and the departments of state that issue visas and travel documents, they're largely outsource that to companies. If you want to travel to the EU, you go to a third party company who then sorts that out, that Schengen visa on behalf of whichever country you're making your first entry into. And there's a whole space for innovation in how we confirm that people are vaccinated. If that is a requirement of a country, vaccination as a requirement to enter that country. But let's take more of your voice notes on 072-567-1567.
Hi, Lester. An organization like WHO, some international organization, should facilitate a single vaccine passport service where governments can upload their own databases to the centralized database, which could easily be verifiable by any customs department that that person has been correctly vaccinated. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks so much for that, Mike. Devin, calling from Qatar. How are you doing, Devin?
I'm doing good. How are you, Lester?
Very good. Thanks so much for listening to us all the way from there. I'm sure you heard me talk about, what's it called, the Ezerat system in Qatar?
The Ezerat is exactly the Ezerat application that we need in Qatar in order to kind of move around freely. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, over and above that, one of your callers mentioned the yellow fever vaccination that you are required to have for some parts of Africa and South America. Mm. In essence, it's pretty much the same thing with the COVID-19 certificate. Mm. But one of the other callers also mentioned if, you know, countries can issue visas stating that you're vaccinated or not. So my case is that about 2 weeks ago, I was issued with a Schengen visa, and in the Schengen visa now, they basically state that you are fully vaccinated. And where you got vaccinated.
But what did you have to, I assume you got vaccinated in Qatar.
Exactly. I got both doses in Qatar about 2 months ago. I completed the second dosage. Hmm. But again, for me, it's just personal reasons having to travel. Hmm. I'm not able to freely travel without being vaccinated. And I was at home for about a week last week. Hmm. And in order to return to Qatar, I needed to provide them with my vaccination certificate. Hmm.
Isn't the issue that Schengen countries accept the Qatar certificate because it's more than just it's more than just a dinky little business card. It's an online system exactly. And there's a QR code. There's actual, you know, backing exactly. behind it.
Exactly. So there is a QR code on the actual certificate that is issued by the Ministry of Public Health here. We had a situation with my sister needing to travel to Switzerland in September, and the Swiss government has basically said they're not sure if they can accept the card that is issued at the moment. So they want a certificate, but South Africa is quite delayed at the moment with issuing certificates in that sense. So there is another country, I think it was Austria, that was actually accepting the card itself, coupled with a affidavit from the police stating that it's authentic.
Devin, my sister wants us, my sister lives in Qatar, and my sister wants us to come visit desperately. Do you know my sister?
We
spoke about this before. So say I want to travel to Qatar. What would I need at the moment as someone, I'm half vaccinated, hopefully going in the last week of August for my second jab.
So, I mean, at the moment, with regulations that change so frequently, not only in Qatar, but worldwide, you would need your COVID vaccination certificate. I'm not too sure at the moment if Qatar is actually accepting the vaccination card issued in South Africa. That is something that your sister would actually just need to make contact with the Qatari Consulate General in South Africa to see if you are able to do that. But at the moment, I mean, one of the callers was mentioning traveling, during, the current pandemic. I've traveled a bit. It has been challenging, but it's not impossible. It's just you have a lot more red tape. I mean, the number of swabs that I had to do over the last year has been over 45, just because COVID-19 is, it's here. It's not going to go in. It's not going to go away anytime soon.
Devin, in Qatar, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate it. And thank you so much to listening to Cape Talk all the way there from Doha. All the best. Stay safe, Devin, there in Qatar. But still taking your calls, 021-446-0567. Drop me a WhatsApp, 0725671567. Hi, Lester. South Africa is a Mickey Mouse country and none of their documents are taken seriously. Thank you. I think you should tackle the why. Remember when our green mambas had lost so much credibility? It was so difficult. There were quite a few, visa-free countries or visa on arrival. But the South African green mamba had a period of lack of legitimacy. I'm pleased to say when that annual list of countries that comes out with where you can use your South African passport with the visa-less entry, it has increased. It has bettered over the last few years. But taking your calls, 021-446-0567. Drop me that WhatsApp, 072-567-1567.